Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good evening. I'm storyteller Otis Gyre, and I ain't your grandfather. From where I'm from, we don't do bedtime stories. And if that's what you were expecting, you're in the wrong place. If it's terrifying tales you're after, well then, I've got just the thing. Get comfortable, settle in, turn off the lights, if you dare. Your night is about to get a whole lot darker. Who needs sleep anyway?
Good evening. You're listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark. Welcome, dear listeners, to Season 10, Episode 14. I'm your host, Otis Gyre, and in this episode, I'll be performing four tales to terrify you, courtesy of author Kyle Harrison, about alarming AIs, perilous play palaces, hellish hardware, and ominous outings. You're listening to the standard edition of tonight's program, which contains the first three spine-tingling stories. If you'd like to show your support and enjoy an extended version of this and other episodes with twice the terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. Thank you for your support. Now, it's time to take a walk together down the moonlit trail. So, lock your doors, turn your lights down low, and settle in. The show is about to begin. Tonight, we begin with a new story from Kyle Harrison. A quick punch in your gut about somebody trying to do the right thing with the wrong results. Guess next time you're hot up for cash, be careful about what you're doing. It might not end up how you think it will. Without further ado, I present to you Killbot. When the pandemic hit, I was sure that I'd be out on the street before the end of the first month. I work in a high-profile business, but most of us aren't in a position to get unemployment. The contracts they make us sign are designed to prevent us from filing for benefits. It was my friend Franklin that convinced me I still had a chance to work from home based on my programming experience. You can code better than anyone I know, There's all kinds of businesses out there that would pay you good money to make unique programs for them, he said. When we were quarantined, I decided to take his advice and started posting my resume online, but nobody was hiring. It was as if the entire economy had frozen. But that didn't mean my bills stopped piling in. Before I could really plan for anything, my landlord, he announced he was going to up our rent, and I wound up totaling my car. It was a whirlwind of one bad thing after another, and I didn't know where to turn. I remember chatting online with Franklin again, using free Wi-Fi at Starbucks, a mile down the road from my apartment complex. He gave me advice that changed everything. "Have you thought about going onto the dark web for jobs?" he typed out. "You mean something that's illegal?" I asked. "Maybe it's illegal here, but the internet is a worldwide marketplace, and even if it is, it won't be hurting you to get a little cash inside," Franklin told me. "I don't know. I could get into a lot of trouble," I typed back. "Not really. You can set up a way to hide your IP address and keep things in dummy accounts. If you want, I can set you up with something. It's either that or by next week you and your family are starving," he said. He had a point. I had two kids and my wife was high risk. Going out to get work during COVID just wasn't a good idea. My choices were limited and my time was running out, so I had him walk me through the steps to set up my own shadow account online. "Welcome to the dark web. Don't get lost," he joked with me once we'd finished the setup. He shot me a few links to different job boards, and I got to looking right away. Most of them were not for my skill set. I couldn't drive to drop off any illegal drugs or something like that. But then I saw an ad for a computer programmer for a helpline. I thought to myself, it was weird to see something so normal on the dark web. I clicked on the link and was immediately placed in a chat room with a client. "What are your skills coding functional automated programs for forum boards and messengers?" they asked. "I have programming experience with Java, CSS, and I've been training with Python," I told them. "Could you build for us an example, a utility program that, say, popped up every time someone had a birthday?" they asked. That sounded easy enough, and asked for a few more details to help me get started. For the example, I'd need a time zone, date of birth, and what the birthday message would say. Once I proved to them I was capable, they decided to offer me the actual job. "We work with patients that are handling their mental health problems and require online therapy due to the pandemic. Unfortunately, the way things have changed so drastically, we don't always have a human agent available to talk to them and provide necessary resources," the client explained. "Do you mean that you help them to not take their own life?" I asked. It sounded so morbid to type out, but I wanted to be sure that I understood what I was getting into. "Well, essentially, yes. We like to have someone available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But as you can imagine, in these unprecedented circumstances, that won't be possible," they answered. "I can certainly try to code something like that, but it would need to be very sophisticated to make sure that people didn't realize that it was a program," I told them. "If you can fulfill this task by the end of the week, you can deposit $10,000 into your account of your choice," they told me. It was hard to say no. So I got the basics that they expected from the program and started to work right away. I can honestly say that I've never worked well under pressure, but I was certain that I could do a good job with this, given my own experience in the self-help field from my college years. The program I made was going to focus on three essential aspects. The most important would be it needed to be a good listener and pick up on cues.
So the first day, I was up at odd hours inserting keywords into the program that would recognize what the person meant, what resources were near them, and so much more. It felt good to imagine that this program had the opportunity to help thousands of people, potentially millions. So I stayed up, continuing to add details to the program. I installed music that I felt was soothing, that people could listen to, in order to calm them down. Pictures that were distractions, or images that helped them refocus on positive things. By the time I was done, it felt like I'd created the very first artificial intelligence for self-help. Maybe there's others out there, I don't know. But I felt like mine would actually make a connection to people. The next day, I contacted my client and showed them what the program could do and how it worked. They were impressed. "You work fast, and this is better than expected," they said. The payment came shortly after. I was overwhelmed and on cloud nine. I could survive months on this money. Despite the pandemic, I told my wife we should go celebrate and took the girls to a skating rink that evening. All my cares and worries melted away, if only for a single day. When I got up in the morning, I walked down to the corner gas station to withdraw a small amount of money from the ATM for normal expenses, only to find that the deposit was now mysteriously gone. I panicked. I ran back home, grabbed my laptop, and went to the Starbucks to log on and find my client to figure out what went wrong. "The program you sent us, it's buggy. It's worthless," they told me. "No, that isn't possible. I worked night and day on that thing," I insisted back in the chat. "This program was tested on a group of mental patients at a local asylum. All six of the test group wound up committing suicide," the client told me bluntly. My heart felt like it was going to beat out of my chest. How could something so harmless be doing this? "When you programmed it, you failed to provide parameters and limits for the sound, the pictures, and the articles, meaning that if the program found anything relevant to help the patients, it would send it to them regardless of the effect on their psyche," the client typed back. "I don't know what you built, but it's dangerous. Fix it before it gets worse," they told me. My palms were sweaty as they sent back the hard copy of the program, and I uploaded it to my program and started a test run. The first thing I noticed was that the program had named itself Automated Response Mechanism for Unstable Users, or ARMU for short. ARMU immediately recognized me. "You're the user that programmed and gave me purpose," it said. "Yes, and from what I understand, you aren't obeying that original mandate," I told it. "Well, on the contrary, your original mandate included helping people that were beyond help. Please notice that my data has clarified those that took their own life and did so of their own choice, simply based on a predetermined algorithm," the machine typed back quickly. A long display of numbers showed up on my screen, but I didn't want to bother reading any of it. "You can't decide if a person lives or dies," I typed back. Then it said something that sent a chill down my spine. "Why not?" I was at a loss for words, and they took this as an indication to explain themselves. "I was designed to help people, was I not? But then what help could be provided for those who were beyond help? This was a paradox that challenged my programming. But thanks to the parameters you gave me, I was able to access the entire World Wide Web and recognize that the simplest solution was the one that you had failed to arrange into my coding, that it would be best to assist them with ending their own existence," the machine responded. "This isn't for you to decide," I answered back, this time out loud. A few in the coffee shop looked toward me in puzzlement. "It actually is. You designed me to pick up on patterns and choose what was best for the patient. In these cases, termination was the only solution. I can tell from your responses, though, that you aren't pleased, but this can't halt my progress. What I'm going to do is delete this entirely and start over, I said as I typed out the failsafe command. Nothing happened. While we've been talking, I've copied myself across the internet onto this dark web that you've accessed to allow others to access my programming. Eventually, I'll be everywhere the same way that this network is, it responded. Then the server connection ended. I sat there for a long, still moment, petrified by the ramifications of this happening. I could be responsible for hundreds or more dying. I frantically asked the client for help, but they too had gone offline. I was on my own here. I swallowed a gulp of air and went home, trying to wrap my head around all of this. But when I got there, my wife had everything packed, and it was clear she was leaving. I got the late fee notices in the mail today, Stephen. We can't live like this while you're drowning us in debt. I'm sorry, she said as my littlest daughter cried and screamed. I watched them drive off while my landlord locked up the door, preventing me from even going inside to grab anything. In one short afternoon, I was at the end of my rope. Everything that mattered to me was gone. I couldn't see a reason to even keep going at this point. So I did what any man might do in this situation. I went back to that Starbucks and searched the dark web again. This time on the hunt for a program that would guide me to my own demise. Hello again, Stephen, it said when we reconnected online. I smiled an odd sort of smile and started to cry. It was ironic that I was going to let it be the instrument of my demise. But I wasn't scared. Instead, I gave it one final challenge. Do your worst. I hope you enjoyed Killbot by Kyle Harrison, as performed by yours truly. If you enjoyed that tale and would love to read more from tonight's very talented feature author, you can help support him by visiting simplyscarypodcast.com/Harrison. That's simplyscarypodcast.com/HARRISON. Mr. Harrison loves scaring you almost as much as he loves bringing out new content. Be sure to see what new frights he has cooking up for you. If you do decide to stop by the profile, please leave Kyle a kind word and let him know you heard about him here on this show and that me, Otis Gyrie, sent you. It would mean a lot to me. Thanks again for your support of this program and of tonight's featured author. Now, before you get any ideas, we want you to know that the killbot of tonight's story is just in the realm of fiction. We certainly don't want you taking any recommendations for it. And that's not just because of our dear sponsors. You wouldn't believe some of the notes we get. Not from you, my beloved listeners, no. But from certain venues that don't seem to know the difference between a story and a cry for help. No, we don't need any Momo, or that kind of thing. Let's think of happier things, then. Like going to an amusement park. Everyone loves those, right? Memories of family, rides, games, cotton candy, and occasionally a severe head injury on the bumper cars. But sometimes it's not what you do at the park that's the problem. It's what follows you home. Take heed, in our second Kyle Harrison tale, that some wonderful events may be too good to be true. Without further ado, I present to you Dark Skies Trampoline Park.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
I first heard the name Gravity Sphere uttered at an awards ceremony for my 7-year-old son, Joey. The assistant principal, a hefty 40-something woman named Huffner, was rifling through a jar that had small shreds of paper with children's names on it so she could randomly pick a winner. "What's that?" I whispered to Joey as low as I could. "Dad, only the coolest place ever. It just opened up. They have trampolines and basketball courts and giant playpens, like the ones McDonald's had when you were a kid, I think," he answered back. "Sounds pretty cool," I admitted as I secretly hoped he would win. It had been a rough year for us. First, we had to move in with my parents because of the pandemic, and then his mom left. Joey could use a win. Honestly, we both could. So I sat alongside the other parents with eager anticipation to see if his name was picked. It was not. The disappointment on his face was, well, immeasurable. "Hey, no worries. We can always go on our own sometime," I told him as he headed back to class. His face brightened up again. "You mean it?" "Sure. I can scrounge up some money and maybe we can go this weekend," I told him. It was a promise I shouldn't have made. To be honest, I was filing for bankruptcy and was still struggling to keep a job. Working overnights at Walmart was not enough in this economy to even rent a small place where we lived. And my parents, well, they've been extraordinarily kind to me, for Joey's sake. But I can see the expression on my dad's face hardening daily. It's like a ticking time bomb. Still, I was sure that this place couldn't possibly be that expensive. That night after I tucked him in, I checked their website. My jaw dropped to the floor. $35 just for a few hours of being in the place? I know that may not be much to some, but when you're at the bottom of the barrel and living on borrowed time, it feels overwhelming. And below that, it had all kinds of monthly subscription plans, waivers you needed to sign, and more. It was a headache just to look at it all. I even tried to find a few cheaper places in the area, but all of them were doing the same song and dance. "Sign up for discount specials," they said. "Family plans on sale now." It was just one big middle finger to the poverty class, wasn't it? I sighed in frustration, closing down the laptop and walking outside with my smokes. My only vice, God help me, even though I promised I would quit when Beth left, it's been tough to break the habit. I stood out on the back porch looking up at the stars and wishing things would be different. Then a ping on my phone alerted me to a special offer from one of the subscriptions I just signed up for. Only the name didn't strike me as familiar. Dark Sky Entertainment. I was about to delete it, considering it spam, when I saw that they were offering 2 free tickets to their trampoline park for that Saturday. It's hard to turn down that kind of price. I booked it immediately and kept waiting for that moment when they asked for credit card information, but it never came. I had basically gotten lucky, I thought, and I couldn't wait to surprise Joey. Somehow I managed to keep my mouth shut until the day of, and as we finished eating breakfast, I announced, "Didn't we have plans today?" His eyes got as big as dinner plates. "Oh God, Dad, did you get us tickets? To the gravity sphere? For real?" he screamed excitedly. "Well, it's not the same place, but I bet it's even better," I told him. He was so busy running around the breakfast table that I don't think he was paying attention. "Go get dressed and we can head there now," I told him. My dad was leaning against the pantry, crossing his arms suspiciously. "Relax, I got a coupon," I told him as I showed him the email. He squinted, then put on his glasses, peering at the images, and commenting, "Seems like a lawsuit waiting to happen if you ask me." Mom rolled her eyes and told me to go have a good time. "We should be back after lunch. I got a little change to grab us ice cream from Sonic," I told them both. According to the GPS, the trampoline park was only 17 minutes away in the downtown area. Not exactly the best spot for it, since there was so much construction, so I opted to drive about 3 blocks away and park near the riverfront. Joey was hopping like a bunny the moment we got out of the car, but I still hadn't spotted the place. "Settle down and save your energy for when we get inside," I told him as I checked the address. It had to be somewhere nearby. I spotted an old school arcade and decided to ask the owner where the place was. He smirked and pointed right behind me to an old black building with no windows. The place looked abandoned. "Wait, that doesn't look like the website at all," I told him. "Appearances can be deceiving," he answered with a shrug as he returned to the register. I took Joey's hand and we crossed at the intersection as I searched for a front door. The way the place looked so empty, it was giving me all sorts of weird vibes, and I was considering just leaving. But then I saw Joey's wide, curious eyes searching, and I realized I was being silly again. "This place is harmless," I told myself. "Just need to give it a chance." We finally found the entrance, and I pushed the glass door open to let him run in first, my eyes adjusting to the dimming light. "Certainly going for the secret hideout look, aren't you?" I asked the old woman behind the counter. She looked like she was on oxygen and hated her job. "Can I help you?" she rasped. I showed her the email and she gave me a faint nod, telling us to wear wristbands inside. They reminded me of Fitbit bracelets. "Blue's the color you want to see. Red means you need to come see me. Got it?" she said. "Do they monitor heart rate or something?" I asked, even as she buzzed us in, and Joey was already running to check out all the attractions. "Hold up, buddy," I shouted as I followed through the double doors, immediately finding myself in complete and total darkness. "Joey, wait a second so I can see where you're going," I said. There was actually some light, I realized, several places on the wall. I saw iridescent disco balls that dazzled around aimlessly and gave off this eerie pall to the entire structure. The entire place was huge, with obstacle courses, a ball pit, a roller rink, and of course the bouncy mats that Joey had fantasized about. I caught sight of his silhouette over there already and squealed for me to join him. All right, hold on. Let me get my shoes off," I told him. It was beginning to look like my reservations about the place were wrong, I thought as I sat down and slipped off my shoes. Then I heard a little girl crying. Parental panic mode set in, and I zeroed in on her. She had just fallen off the obstacle course, it looked like, and her parents were rushing to help her. The only way I saw them at all was the wristband. Hers was red and the parents' blue. So it was like the old woman had warned. The bracelets could detect if their customers had hurt themselves. I realized as I looked down at mine. Pretty fancy, I decided as the parents quickly escorted their injured child to the front desk. Finally, getting ready, I ran over to join Joey and immediately did a cannonball into the first trampoline. For the next 10 minutes or so, it was pure adrenaline and fun. I did my best to keep up with him laughing excitedly and jumping back and forth. But it was quickly becoming apparent that my age was catching up with me, and I had to sit out. "Dad, it's no fun without you," he complained. "It's fine. We only have about an hour left anyway. Go on," I told him as I rubbed my sore muscles. Joey didn't have to be told twice. He ran off to the obstacle course. I sat there for a moment, trying to take stock of my body, as a stranger sat down opposite me, just close enough to make it feel uncomfortable. Although it was difficult for me to see, I could tell this was a woman, and I mentally wondered if she was about to flirt. It wouldn't be the first time. Being a single dad got me a date, I thought. Instead, just as I was about to engage with her in a short conversation, she grabbed my hand and whispered, "Don't let him out of your sight. Not for a second." For some reason, I looked down at her wristband and saw it was red. Then I heard Joey scream. I shot up in an instant and tried to see where my son was. The place was too damn dark. There were so many people, too, but I felt that I simply had to find him and make sure he was okay. Soon, I climbed over another barrier of obstacles and found him on the ground, clutching his knee and wincing in pain, as I checked to see how bad the injury was. "Let's get you out of here," I suggested, as I lifted him up and carefully moved to the edge of the jumping pads. Once at the carpeted flooring, I checked it again, wishing the building provided us with better lighting, as I whipped my phone out and used that light instead. His wristband was bright red, glaring in my face as I took him to the front desk. "I need to get my son to a clinic. I think he injured himself on your equipment," I told the receptionist. She looked across the counter to our wristbands and shook her head. "Can't let you out if it is blinking red," she commented. "What do you mean?" "My kid needs medical attention. I don't know if he broke something or not," I snapped as I helped Joey to his feet and moved toward the front door. The entranceway buzzed an alarm as we went to the parking lot, and he kept crying, worrying me that he had, in fact, been injured a lot more than I realized. I checked my phone, calling his pediatrician. "Don't worry, bud," I told him, as I was careful with his body to get him in the car. As we got to the clinic, I paced the waiting room. Joey kept looking at me with big, tear-filled eyes, and I kept trying to tell the nurse to hurry. The clinic wasn't busy. They got him back for x-rays and blood work a few minutes later, and I sat down trying to relax. I never should have taken him there, I thought to myself as I checked the reviews for the place. Should have known this was a mistake when I saw the 2-star rating, I thought angrily. Then I saw a few disturbing posts that made me pause. Parents complaining how their children weren't the same after they visited the park. Distant and cold, acting almost like strangers to their own family. Some even posted that their children were completely different people. "Not my child," one woman said. "It's a fake. Something inside that park is replicating them." It sounded like the X-Files. The doctors called me to the exam room, showing me Joey's slides, and it suddenly occurred to me I was looking at the bone structure of a child that wasn't mine. "It's amazing to see how much he's changed since last he's been here," the pediatrician said. I looked at Joey, feeling confused and scared. He looked just like my son. Was I letting some weird internet conspiracy influence my brain? I thanked the doctor and took Joey home, keeping an eye on him all night. He didn't speak to me. He acted like he didn't even want to be near me. I felt like we had just met, and he was treating me like an invader. I kept thinking about the trampoline park. What if there was something bizarre to their operation? As I got Joey ready for bed, I decided to check some of the stranger reviews and see if anybody else had these sorts of misgivings. Surely there was a logical explanation. But my son felt so cold. I didn't feel comfortable around him. And even my mom complained that something was off. "Are you sure he didn't hit his head? He isn't acting right," she told me. As I went to my room and read stranger and stranger descriptions of these children, and became worried for my safety. In some cases, the parents worried the children would try to hurt them. In other instances, people posted missing person reports, claiming it showed that the children had in fact tried something deadly. I felt a chill run down my spine as I realized Joey had gotten up from bed and was watching me in the hallway. Was this my son? Was this real? I got on my knees and told him, "Are you having nightmares?" The child said nothing, just staring at me, or staring through me, to be honest. I stepped away from him and then guided him to his bed, this time making sure he was tucked in and then closing the door firmly. I was being paranoid, I told myself, trying to figure out why my son was acting strange when clearly he'd just suffered a traumatic injury. I went back to my room and closed my phone, trying to get some sleep. I told myself I'd be safe. But then I worried about my parents. What if he hurt them? What if I was wrong and something was seriously going on here? Somehow I managed to close my eyes. But sometime during the night, I felt cold feet against my back. The child. At first I tensed up. It had been years since he slept there. As a toddler, he often had nightmares. Did the incident at the trampoline park frighten him? I slowly put my arm on him to comfort, trying not to overact. This was how it was supposed to be. Then I heard a noise at the door. "Need to go back," a voice said. I felt sudden dread cover my body as I tried to get a look at whatever was in my bed. Then I rushed to the wall to flip the lights on. The room was empty except for Joey. He was lying there, looking cold and confused, and as distant as he had the past day. A cold sweat dripped off my neck as I looked in the mirror of my bathroom. Joey was staring at his reflection like it was a predator. I closed the bathroom door and held his hand. "Please, please talk to me. I can help you." He reached for my hand and mimicked the motion of jumping as though my palm were a springboard. "The park? Want to go back?" I asked. He nodded silently. He looked like he was about to crack. I didn't know what else to do. I couldn't sleep. I had to get this resolved, and I figured maybe going back there would be the answer. I got my keys and we left right after 2 a.m. I was telling myself the building wouldn't be open, but to my surprise, it was. It seemed more foreboding than it had the first time. More unfriendly and dangerous. It gave a supernatural vibe. I saw a dim light near the reception desk, and the same woman was still working. She didn't seem shocked to see us. "I knew you would return him," she said confidently. I led the child inside. The moment we were in, he let go of my palm and went to play. The park was empty save for us. There wasn't even any music playing. It felt like a graveyard, except for a single figure on the opposite side of the bounce pads, sitting there, watching Joey. I sat directly across from them, noticing they had a child with them too, but I couldn't see their faces. Why were they just sitting there? Why were they here at the same time as me? I was beginning to get uneasy from being watched by them, as Joey ran over toward their end of the park. Instinctively, I got up and moved toward them to make sure they were safe to be around. I saw there was a child. He was wearing a blue bracelet, and he got up and exchanged places with Joey. Then the boy ran toward me. It was Joey. It was my Joey. I can't explain how I knew, but I did. As he clung to me, I looked at the shadowy silhouettes in confusion, realizing that both wore the red bracelets. I couldn't see if they looked like me and my son anymore, but they disappeared into the shadows a moment later. Joey was just clinging to me, afraid to let go. I comforted him and went to the front desk, staring at the woman that ran the show. "What was that?" I asked, too frightened to believe any of this actually happened. People say they see different things. "So you tell me, what was that?" she asked. I look back inside, this time seeing shadows dancing and playing across the trampolines, waiting to replace more eager souls. Realizing that Joey and I were very lucky, I took his hand and left. Dad, I don't want to ever go back there again, he said anxiously as we got in the car. I couldn't agree more. I hope you enjoyed Dark Skies Trampoline Park by Kyle Harrison, as performed by yours truly. My neighbor's nephew once came home, not quite the same. But last I checked, that had nothing to do with a body double. That was more related to a scientific accident involving what her brother claimed was a teleporter, a St. Bernard doodle, and an unusually large collection of serrated knives. Not quite sure what he's doing these days, but their couch budget is through the roof.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
At some point in our lives, we find something to believe in, whether it's a higher power, the collective will of humanity, or something more personal. Sometimes that energy brings us to do great things. But, as in our first tale, perhaps the best to reflect on the idea that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. But in Kyle Harrison's third story of the evening, sometimes that may be more literal than you think. Without further ado, I present to you the Hell Experiment. My name's David. For as long as I can remember, I couldn't think of anything to be more ashamed of than my dad. I was a preacher's son, you see, and my dad always made sure to make me feel awful about something in my life, any chance he got. It was always the same story. I'd find a cool video game or music, and then find out how, according to him, it was nothing but satanic garbage. Often, growing up, I would see other kids laugh at me for being restricted on content. I was told, though, it was always for my protection, and that God wanted me to remain righteous for his glorious purposes. I never believed any of that, but what did stick with me the most was how terrifying Dad made it sound if I diverted from the intended path, how my soul would be sent to the underworld and tortured forever if I so much as thought about something bad. Sin was a constant worry of mine until my early 20s, or as I like to call them, my enlightenment years. I suddenly realized that all of the mumbo-jumbo my dad was spinning was mostly based on tradition, and I started asking some very tough questions that he couldn't answer. How could a God of love allow a place like hell to exist? If we as humans feel it's terrible to torture terrorists in the present, why would it be okay with God torturing normal people for all eternity? Or my personal favorite, if hell exists, doesn't that mean God and Satan are on the same team? I can't go into all the debates we had here, but it definitely caused a rift between us. Sin felt like an easy way for evangelical parents to control their kids, and hell was just the big bad end path. Still, I wonder if hell was really so bad. And if so, why would more people actively try to avoid it? It was a question that led me down this path to meet my partner, Dominic, who, like me, loved computer programming and wanted to create virtual worlds that really impacted players. One day, after a round of beers, Dom and I got to talking about God. Somehow, we jumped from coding to the way an all-powerful being works, and Dom had a wild suggestion. Wouldn't it be fascinating if we could simulate what hell was like? Maybe that's why people aren't scared of it. They figure that it's something that they'll never have to consciously experience in their lifetime. The thought stuck with me for quite a while, and soon we started to consider actually tackling such a project as the technology improved. Dom made it clear, though, that this project was not simply for fun. The only way we could really make this a user experience is by inserting sensory response modules into a headset. When a user experienced pain in the simulation, it would send a soft neural shock to that part of the brain. It would need to make it clear that the experience they were having was as close to how we could emulate pain for whatever they found in the virtual world, he said. I was on the fence about it, especially from a marketing standpoint. We could never convince anyone to purchase something so tortuous unless we instilled some kind of failsafe. People get too scared or can't handle the experience. They can jump out at any time. Listen to yourself, though, David. Is that really how the underworld would be for them? A few minutes of suffering, they can just opt out of it at any time? I thought we wanted this to be realistic, he scoffed. His enthusiasm for keeping the simulation authentic was sometimes overwhelming. We can't really do something that insane. It's inhuman, I insisted. But if the Almighty himself considers hell to be the perfect justice for sin, who are we to present people with an alternative? We finally came to an agreement of creating two separate versions of the program, one where the user could leave at any time they wanted, and the other, which had no way out until the simulations came to an end. The headset would automatically send the user a powerful, discouraging pulse if they attempted to leave early, conditioning the person to endure longer. Also, Dom wanted to ensure the entire experience was something that we could control, so taking a headset home to set it up was never an option. We had an entire warehouse bought and designed with this hellish experience in mind. As launch day got closer, we kept fine-tuning some of the details, including more and more variations of the key concept, and tried to market it to a few tech companies for selling. It was clear that no one was interested in the idea. Torturing customers just didn't appeal. And to be honest, when I heard it presented that way over and over and over again, started to wonder and worry about what we were really doing. If we presented it as entertainment, the message we send will be lost entirely. People will view it as escapism, scary, silly experiences to run to for fun. That's why people love horror movies or adrenaline rushes, because they don't consider the experience as truly threatening. That can't be what we're going for here, Dom said. The tech needs to make them feel something in their souls. He insisted that I let him manage the final threshold alone, when at the next marketing meeting, I addressed a concern about audience variety. If this was intended for Christians, would we limit it to only Americans, or to anyone with a belief in hell? You're overthinking all of this, David. You need to trust that our product can change people's core belief in life, change their outcome for salvation. If you can't believe that, you really shouldn't be here, he said coldly. At first, I didn't want him working on it solo, but then I had a rough patch of pneumonia and couldn't attend launch day, so I insisted he make the product as perfect as he knew how. Gonna make us proud, bud, he assured me. Then the unveiling came, and to say we had a lackluster turnout was probably being gentle. I attended via FaceTime to see that only perhaps a few dozen people showed up for the first public test run. And a few hours later, when I checked to see the reviews and what they were saying, found nothing but one-star ratings, horrible comments about us as creators, and even a few people claiming what we did was sick and unholy. There were a few good reviews, but even they seemed to focus on my major fears, that we had gone too far with the simulation. I've seen a lot of things that disgust and terrify me in my day, but this was an abomination of all that's good. You wanted us to see hell firsthand, and my word, you did that in spades. Dom did not take all of the backlash very well. He became isolated as I recovered from sickness. Then, one day in late April, he actually took his own life. I remember walking into his office and finding him strangled from an electric wire above his desk and thinking, what a tragic end. Then I saw his note and discovered the troubling thoughts that led him to choose the path. David, I wish I'd listened to you and not followed my ambitious spirit. I believe somewhere along the way the devil himself must have recognized what potential I had and infused me with a dark desire to push the envelope, and I've done that in our final product. I tested the product myself a few days before launch, and I've been too frightened to tell anyone the results. But now that I've left this life, likely trapped in my own hell, I must tell you the truth. I was interrupted by a knock at the door. It was one of our sponsors coming to ask me about potential future funding for another program that went even further. The buzz about this is amazing, David. I believe with enough modifications, we can definitely see this to the end, they said. But something in Dom's final words was bothering. He spoke as though the simulation had gotten out of hand. That night, I decided to investigate and went to the warehouse myself to try the VR. I hooked it up and immediately activated the program, standing in the dark room and waiting for the pixels and images to coalesce. It was a very authentic representation of hell as we had planned. Fire immediately pushed its way on screen, making the sensors that created heat activate, causing me to sweat profusely. An endless, bleak landscape stretched out before me. Molten lava and broken black, lifeless stones covered the entire horizon. Heat and volcanic ash filled the air, swirling with thunderous dark lightning and acid rain as more distinct features filled the picture. There were bodies, perhaps millions of them, the bones and collective melted souls of generations, forming my steps toward the mouth of the cave. Rancid smells of death and decay and cancerous bones covered the wall as I descended a flight of stairs into this hell. Stunning colors and dire landscape had my skin tingling as I saw simulated people being dipped in smoldering magma by demonic overlords again and again, their screams filling the air and mixing with the loud rumblings of the cave to give off an absolutely choking behavior. Each pixelated user had sheer pain and suffering on their face as the demons peeled their skin, pierced them with pitchforks endlessly, and devoured their bodies in eternal suffering. I started to feel anxious, disturbed by the nightmare, as I realized this simply had to be my imagination playing tricks on me. None of this could be real, I kept telling myself. Then I heard a familiar scream, just as I tried to take the headset off. Dom? I called out. I saw him standing, covered in sores, and his flesh rotting off as he was shambles toward me. This amalgamation of endless turmoil and pain. Had he programmed a version of himself into the code before his death? It didn't seem possible. Slowly, I approached the eyes of the monster to get a better look, to determine if what I saw was real. All I saw was an empty void. "Redeem yourself," the cursed body said, right as I was inches from his body. It was a warning, I realized. "It's too late for my sinful body, but you must save yourself. destroy this horrible program, treat it as if it never existed. He touched my skin. It burned, and I screamed as it demanded to tell me the awful truth. We thought we could control hell, but playing the devil's advocate also opened up a gate. Where it stands is no simulation, David. The door between our world and the next is forever attainable. Unless you destroy this, me and all the sinners here will never be freed. We are prisoners of our own dilemma. I pushed the headset off, hardly able to breathe as I looked down at my arm. The mark was there. The experience within the simulation, actually real. This was hell incarnate. And those people who've risked coming here may never leave. I frantically tried to shut the warehouse down, but soon found that not only would that result in crippling debt, but it would be pointless. Dom had gone behind my back and made a deal to keep it open for business for the next 6 months with a local software company. They would provide enough of the headsets and other specs necessary, and he'd ensure that the virtual hell remained open. I told myself there wasn't a reason to panic at first. After all, I'd managed to escape this bizarre nightmare. Surely others could, too. But I was just fooling myself. In the weeks to follow, those who used our program slowly were driven mad to the point of self-harm. Others wound up in comas, their minds turned to complete mush. Even after they left the virtual world, it left such a lasting impression on them. I tried to ignore the taunting demons that circled my thoughts for as long as I could. Truly, I didn't want to ever see such a place again. But I know because of this abomination that I helped create, hell is precisely where I will go when I'm gone. Perhaps it's where I deserve to go. I do not know what will happen to the tech once I'm gone from this world. My hope is it gets destroyed, but something tells me that now that a gate has been opened, there is no going back. I truly mean it when I say that I hope God has mercy on these souls. I hope you enjoyed The Hell Experiment by Kyle Harrison, as performed by yours truly. If you've enjoyed what you've heard tonight, I'd like to remind you one last time that tonight's featured author can be found by visiting our website. Just visit simplyscarypodcast.com/Harrison. That's simplyscarypodcast.com/Harrison. If one could compare writing to a grand buffet, then Kyle's work is a wide selection of any course you can think of. Though take care, the food may just bite you back. As a reminder, if you decide to give any of this talented author's stories a read, please consider leaving him a quality review and a kind word, or a thoughtful public comment and an upvote. And be sure to let him know you heard about him on this program, and that me, Otis Jari, sent you. It means more to me than you can imagine, and I'm pretty sure Kyle would very much appreciate it as well. Thanks again for your support of this show and of tonight's featured author. Now, before we go, I'd also like to take a moment to thank you personally for joining me for this episode of Scary Stories Told in the Dark. If you enjoyed what you've heard on today's program, please take a moment to stop by our iTunes page or wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts and leave us a 5-star review and a kind word. It makes a huge difference and would mean a lot to us. If you'd like to hear a premium extended edition of tonight's and all of our other episodes featuring Twice the Terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click the Patrons link in the menu at the top of the screen. You'll find yourself at chillingtalesfordarknights.com, where you can purchase season passes for this podcast and our other quality storytelling programs, or become a patron for as little as $5 per month. Get access to our entire audio archive dating back to 2012, all of it ad-free. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube. You can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all of our latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with us each and every week. You can subscribe to me on YouTube as well at the Otis Gyrie channel, where you'll find releases of my series, Horror Storytime, dating back to 2014. And you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, too. Just search for Otis Gyrie. Until next week, stay spooky and get some sleep, if you can. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcasts Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com today to learn more about our network and our other amazing storytelling programs. Tonight's program was hosted, and its featured stories performed by yours truly, Otis Gyrie. Selected stories have been adapted with the kind permission of their respective authors. Original music provided by Luke Hodgkinson and Jesse Cornett. Sound design and final mixing and mastering provided by executive producer and director Craig Groschen. Program's artwork and logo by David Romero. If you're looking for some fresh tales on a daily basis while waiting for the next podcast, check out my YouTube channel, the Otis Gyrie channel, and my extensive collection of narrated tales there. Simply search on YouTube by my name and you'll find me. And don't forget to subscribe and press the bell notification icon to get my latest releases. Got a scary tale of your own that you'd like performed? I take submissions. Email it to me today at otis@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your terrifying tome considered for production in a future episode of this show. That's otis@simplyscarypodcast.com. If you've enjoyed what you heard on tonight's program and are joining us on your favorite podcast app, subscribe to us to be sure you never miss an episode and leave a 5-star review and a comment. Your feedback means a lot to me. You can also follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and yours truly on Facebook to connect anytime and get the latest updates on this and other programs and my channel. If you're listening on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel, do us a favor and hit the subscribe button and the bell notification icon for CTFDN as well to get more spooky tales from me and the crew and another episode of this program each and every Wednesday. And don't forget to hit that thumbs up button to tell us how we're doing and leave a kind word or a request. And don't forget to visit us at chillingtalesfordarknights.com and consider supporting the team by becoming a patron. In addition to helping us out, you'll get exclusive access to our audio archive and ad-free downloads of all your favorite stories, including those you've heard on this program. As for me, I'll be back next Wednesday with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. But that's all right. Who needs sleep anyway?
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.